The IDs from deactivated carts, Finn said. These carts are just recently killed. Their IDs are still in the system. I don't think Jer had time to figure this one out. Figure what out? Kerensky asked. I think you're right, Dahl said, and pulled up on his phone a map of the cargo tunnels. It doesn't look like he's had time to make his hidey hole disappear from the ship records either, since all of the cart distribution nodes are still on the map. So that's 7 nodes, Finn said. Which one do you want to try first? Dahl pulled up Weston's information. His station was here in the Bay Complex, so I'd say we try the node closest to it, he said, and then returned to the map and highlighted a node. So I'd say we start here. Looks good, Finn said. I order you to tell me what you're planning, Kerensky said plaintively. We're about to help you capture Jer Weston, Finn said. That'll probably get you promoted. Oh, Kerensky said, and then stood up a bit straighter. We should definitely do that then. And avenge the death of Grover here, Dahl added, nodding to Grover's still surprised body. Yes, that too, Kerensky said, and looked down at the body. Poor man. This was his last away mission. Well, yes, Finn said. No, I mean that his term of duty was over in just a couple of days, Kerensky said. I signed him to this mission specifically so he could have one more away experience, a last hurrah. He tried to beg off of it, but I insisted. That was deeply malicious of you, Dahl said. Kerensky nodded, either not knowing what malicious meant or simply not hearing it, apparently lost in reverie. A shame, really. He was going to be married, too. Oh, please stop, Finn said. Otherwise I'm going to have to frag you. What? Kerensky said, looking up at Finn. I think he means we should probably get going, sir, Dahl said, smoothly. Right, Kerensky said. So where are we going? You two wait here, Kerensky whispered at a bend in the corridor, after which came the distribution node they were sneaking up on. I'll surprise him and stun him, and then we'll contact the captain. We can't contact the captain. We left our phones in the shuttle bay, Finn said. And we should probably deactivate all the armed carts first, Dahl said. Yes, yes, Kerensky said, mildly irritated. But first, I'll take him down. A fine plan, Dahl said. We're right behind you, Finn said. Kerensky nodded and readied his weapon, and then leapt out into the corridor, calling Jer Weston's name. There was an exchange of pulse gun fire, each blast going wide. From the top of the corridor there was a shower of sparks as a pulse gun blast ricocheted through the ductwork, which collapsed on Kerensky, pinning him. He groaned and passed out. He really is completely useless, Finn said. What do you want to do now? Dahl asked. I have a plan, Finn said. Come on. He stood and walked forward, pulse gun behind his back. Dahl followed. After a few steps, the curve of the corridor revealed a disheveled Jer Weston standing on the distribution node, pulse gun in hand, clearly considering whether or not to kill Kerensky. Hey, Jer, Finn said, walking up to him. It's me, Finn. Weston squinted. Finn? Seriously? Here? He smiled. Jesus, man, what are the odds? I know, Finn said, and then shot Weston with a stun pulse. Weston collapsed. That was your plan, Dahl said a second later. Hoping he'd pause in recognition before he shot you? In retrospect, the plan has significant logistical issues, Finn admitted. On the other hand, it worked. You can't argue with success. Sure you can, Dahl said, when it's based on stupidity. Anyway, this makes my point to you, Finn said. If I was going to die on this mission, this probably would have been the moment, right? Me squaring off against my former fellow crew member... But I'm alive, and he's stunned and captured. So much for the narrative and dying at dramatically appropriate moments. I hope you take the lesson to heart. Fine, Dahl said. Maybe I've been weirding myself out. I'm still not following you at the battle anymore. That's probably wise, Finn said, and then glanced over to the small computer at the distribution node, which Weston was probably using to control the cargo carts. Why don't you disable the killer carts, and I'll figure out how we're going to get Jer out of here. You could use a cart, Dahl said, going to the computer. There's an idea, Finn said. Dahl disabled the carts across the ship, and then heard a groan from Kerensky's direction. Sounds like someone is up, he said to Finn. I'm busy trussing Jer like a turkey, Finn said. Handle it if you would. Dahl walked over to Kerensky, who was still pinned under ductwork. Morning, sir, he said to Kerensky. Did I get him? Kerensky asked. Congratulations, sir, Dahl said. Your plan worked perfectly.
Excellent, Kerensky said, and wheezed a bit as the debris on top of him compressed his lungs.
Would you like some help with your ductwork, sir? Dahl asked.
Please, Kerensky said.
There's nothing in Crewman Weston's file that indicates any sympathy for the Calendrian rebel cause, said Sandra Bullington, captain of the Nance. I requested a hyperwaved report from the W Investigative Service. Weston isn't religious or political. He doesn't even vote. Bullington, Abernathy, King, Finn, and Dahl stood in front of a windowed room in the brig in which Jer Weston sat. He was confined to a stasis chair, which was itself the only piece of furniture in the room. He looked groggy, but was smiling. Kerensky was in sickbay with bruised ribs. What about family and friends? King asked.
Nothing there either, Bullington said. He comes from a long line of Methodists from on the other side of the W. None of his known associates have any link to Calendria or its religious or political struggles.
Abernathy looked through the glass at Weston. Has he explained himself at all? He asked.
No, Bullington said. That son of a bitch killed 18 crew members and he won't say why. So far, he's invoked his right to non-incrimination. But he says he's willing to confess everything under one condition.
What's that? Abernathy said.
That you're the one he gets to confess to, Bullington said.
Why me? Abernathy asked. Bullington shrugged.
He wouldn't say, she said. If I had to guess, I would say it's because you're the captain of the flagship of the fleet and your exploits are known throughout the Union. Maybe he just wants to be brought in by a celebrity.
Sir, I recommend against it, King said.
We've had him physically searched, Bullington said. There's nothing in his cavities, and even if there were, he's in a stasis chair. He can't move anything below his neck at the moment. If you stay out of biting range, you'll be fine.
I still recommend against it, King said. It's worth the risk to get to the bottom of this, Abernathy said, and then looked over to Dahl and Finn. I'll have these two come in with me, armed. If something happens, I trust one of them will take him down.
King looked unhappy but didn't say anything more.
2 minutes later, Abernathy, Dahl, and Finn came through the door. Weston smiled and addressed Finn.
Finn, you shot me, he said.
Sorry, Finn said.
It's all right, Weston said. I figured I would get shot. I just didn't know it would be you who did it.
Captain Bullington said you were ready to confess, but that you wanted to confess to me, Abernathy said. I'm here.
Yes, you are, Weston said.
Tell us what your relationship is with the Calendrian rebels, Abernathy said.
The who what now? Weston said.
The Calendrian rebels, Abernathy repeated. I have no idea what you're talking about, Weston said. You fired on the Pontifex's ship after the Intrepid was disabled by the rebels, Abernathy said. You can't honestly expect us to believe that the two were unrelated.
They are related, Weston said. Just not that way.
You're wasting my time, Abernathy said and turned to go.
Don't you want to know what the connection is? Weston asked.
We know what the connection is, Abernathy said. It's the Calendrian rebels.
No, Weston said. The connection is you.
What? Abernathy said, squinting.
Weston turned to Finn. Sorry you had to be here, he said, and then started blinking one eye at a time. First two left, then three right, then one left, then three right.
Bomb! Finn yelled, and Dahl flung himself at the captain as Weston's head exploded. Dahl felt the uniform and skin on his back fry in the heat as the blast wave pushed him into Abernathy, crushing the two of them against the wall. Some indeterminate time later, Dahl heard someone shout his name, looked up, and saw Abernathy grabbing and shaking him. Abernathy had burns on his hands and arms, but appeared largely fine. Dahl had shielded him from the worst of the blast. Upon realizing that, the whole of Dahl's back seared into painful life. Dahl pushed Abernathy away from him and crawled over to Finn on the floor, his face in front burned. He had been closest to the blast. As Dahl made it to his friend, he saw that the one eye Finn had remaining had looked over to him. Finn's hand twitched, and Dahl grabbed it, causing Finn to spasm in pain. Dahl tried to break contact, but Finn grabbed on. His lips moved. Dahl moved to his friend's face to hear what he had to say.
This is just ridiculous, is what Finn whispered.
I'm sorry, Dahl said.
Not your fault, Finn eventually said. I'm still sorry, Dahl said. Finn gripped Dahl's hand tighter.
Find a way to stop this, he said.
I will, Dahl said.
Okay.
Finn breathed and died. Abernathy came over to pull Dahl away from Finn. Despite the pain, Dahl took a swing at Abernathy. He missed and lost consciousness before his fist had swung all the way around. Chapter 13. Tell me how to stop this, Dahl said to Jenkins. Jenkins, who of course knew Dahl was coming to his secret lair, looked him over. You look healed, he said. Good. Sorry about your friend Finn. Did you know what was going to happen to him? Dahl asked. No, Jenkins said. It's not like whoever is writing this crap sends me the scripts in advance. And this one was particularly badly written. Jer Weston walking around for years with a biological bomb in his head, waiting for an encounter with Captain Abernathy, who he blamed for the death of his own father on an away team 20 years ago, and taking advantage of an unrelated diplomatic incident to do so? That's just hack work.
So tell me how to stop it, Dahl said.
You can't stop it, Jenkins said. There's no stopping it. There is only hiding from it.
Hiding isn't an option, Dahl said.
Sure it is, Jenkins said, and opened his arms as if to say, see?
This is not an option for anyone else but you, Dahl said. We can't all sneak around in the bowels of a spaceship.
There are other ways to hide, Jenkins said. Ask your former boss, Collins.
She's only safe as long as you're around, Dahl said, and not using the toilet.
Find a way off the ship then, Jenkins said. You and your friends.
That won't help either, Dahl said. Jer Weston killed 18 members of the Nance crew with his armed cargo carts. They weren't safe against what happens here on the Intrepid, were they? An entire planet suffered a plague so that we could create a last-minute vaccine for Kerensky. They weren't safe either.
Even you're not safe, Jenkins.
I'm pretty safe, Jenkins said.
You're pretty safe because your wife was the one who died and all you were was part of her backstory, Dahl said. But what happens to you when one of the writers on whatever television show this is thinks about you?
They're not going to, Jenkins said.
Are you sure? Dahl said. On the Nance, Jer Weston was using your trick of hiding in the cargo tunnels. That's where we found him. That's where we caught him. Whatever hack thought up that last episode now has it in his brain that the cargo tunnels can be used as hiding spaces. How long until he starts thinking about you?
Jenkins didn't say anything to this, although Dahl couldn't tell if it was because he was considering the idea of being in a writer's crosshairs or because he mentioned Jenkins' wife.
None of us are safe from this thing, Dahl said. You lost your wife to it. I just lost a friend. You say I and all my friends are going to end up dying for dramatic purposes. I say whatever happens to us is going to happen to you, too. All your hiding doesn't change that, Jenkins. It's just delaying it. And meanwhile, you live your life like a rat in the walls.
Jenkins looked around.
I wouldn't say a rat, he said. Are you happy living this way? Dahl asked.
I haven't been happy since my wife died, Jenkins said. It was her death that got me onto all of this anyway. Looking at the statistics of deaths on this ship, seeing how events on this ship played themselves out, figuring that the most logical explanation was that we were part of a television show, realizing my wife died simply to be a dramatic moment before a commercial, that in this television show, she was a bit player, an extra. She probably had about 10 seconds of airtime. No one watching that episode probably has any memory of her now. Don't know her first name was Margaret, or that she liked white wines more than red, or that I proposed to her in her parents' front yard during a family reunion, or that we were married for 7 years before some hack decided to kill her.
But I remember her.
Do you think she'd be happy with how you're living? Dahl asked.
I think she'd understand why I do it, Jenkins said. What I do on this ship keeps people alive.
Keeps some people alive, Dahl said. It's a zero-sum game. Someone is always going to have to die.
Your alert system keeps the old hands here alive, but it makes it more likely the new crew get killed.
It's a risk, yes, Jenkins said.
Jenkins,
How long were you and your wife stationed on the Intrepid before she died? Dahl asked. Jenkins opened his mouth to respond and then shut it like a trap.
It wasn't very long, was it? Dahl asked.
Jenkins shook his head to say no and then looked away.
People on this ship figured it out before you came on it, Dahl said. Maybe they didn't come to the same conclusions you did, but they saw what was happening and guessed their odds of survival. Now you're giving them better tech to do the same thing to new crew that they did to your wife.
I think you should leave now, Jenkins said, still turned away from Dahl. Jenkins, listen to me, Dahl said, leaning in. There's no way to hide from this. There's no way to run from it. There's no way to avoid fate. If the narrative exists, and you and I know it does, then in the end, we don't have free will. Sooner or later, the narrative will come for each of us. It'll use us however it wants to use us, and then we'll die from it, like Finn did, like Margaret did, unless we stop it.
Jenkins looked back over at Dahl, eyes wet.
You're a man of faith, aren't you, Dahl? He said. You know my history, Dahl said. You know I am.
How can you still be? Jenkins said.
What do you mean? Dahl asked.
I mean that you and I know that in this universe, God is a hack, he said. He's a writer on an awful science fiction television show, and he can't plot his way out of a box. How do you have faith when you know that?
Because I don't think that's actually God, Dahl said.
You think it's the show's producer, then, Jenkins said, or maybe the president of the network.
I think your definition of what a god is and what my definition is probably differ, Dahl said, but I don't think any of this is the work of God, or of a god of any sort. If this is a television show, then it was made by people. Whatever and however they're doing this to us, they are just like us. And that means we can stop them. We just have to figure out how. You have to figure it out, Jenkins.
Why me? Jenkins asked.
Because you know this television show we're trapped in better than anyone else, Dahl said. If there's a solution or a loophole, you're the only one who can find it, and soon, because I don't want any more of my friends to die because of a hack writer. And that includes you.
We could just blow up the Intrepid, said Hester.
It wouldn't work, said Hansen.
Of course it would work, Hester said.
Kaplooey, there goes the Intrepid, there goes the show.
The show's not about the Intrepid, Hansen said. It's about the characters on it, Captain Abernathy and his crew.
Some of them, anyway, Duval said.
The five main characters, Hansen amended. If you blow up the ship, they'll just get another ship, a better ship. They'll just call it the Intrepid A or something like that. It's happened on other science fiction shows.
You've been studying, Hester said mockingly. Yes, I have, Hansen said seriously. After what happened to Finn, I went and learned about every science fiction television show I could find.
What did you find out? Dahl asked. He had already briefed his friends on his latest encounter with Jenkins.
That I think Jenkins is right, Hansen said.
That we're on a television show? Duval asked.
No, that we're on a bad one, Hansen said. As far as I can tell, the show we're on is pretty much a blatant rip-off of that show Jenkins told us about.
Star Wars, Hester said.
Star Trek, Hansen said.
There was a Star Wars, though.
It was different.
Whatever, Hester said. So not only is the show we're on bad, it's plagiarized. And now my life is even more meaningless than it was before.
Why would you make a show a knockoff of another show? Duval asked.
Star Trek was very successful in its time, Hansen said. So someone else came along and just reused the basic ideas. It worked because it worked before. People would still be entertained by the same stuff, more or less.
Did you find our show in your research? Dahl asked.
No, Hansen said. But I didn't think I would. When you create a science fiction show, you create a new fictional timeline, which starts just before the production date of that television show. That show's past doesn't include the television show itself.
Because that would be recursive and meta, Duval said.
Yes, but I don't think they thought about it that hard, Hansen said. They just wanted the shows to be realistic in their own context, and you can't be realistic if there's a television show version of you in your own past.
I hate that we now have conversations like this, Hester said.
I don't think any of us like it, Dahl said.
I don't know, I think it's interesting, Duval said.
It would be interesting if we were sitting in a dorm room getting stoned, Hester said. Talking about it seriously after our friend has died sort of takes the fun out of it.
You're still angry about Finn, Hansen said. Of course I am, Hester spat. Aren't you?
I recall you and him not getting along when you came on the Intrepid, Dahl said.
I didn't say I always liked him, Hester said, but we got better with each other while we were here, and he was one of us. I'm angry about what happened to him.
I'm still pissed at him for knocking me out with that pill, Duval said, and I feel guilty about it, too. If he hadn't done that, he might still be alive, and you might be dead, Dahl pointed out.
Not if I wasn't written to die in the episode, Duval said.
But Finn was written into the episode, Hansen said. He was always going to be there. He was always going to be in that room when that bomb went off.
Remember when I said I hated the conversations we have these days? Hester said. Just now? This is exactly the sort of conversation I'm talking about.
Sorry, Duval said.
Jimmy, you said that whenever the show started, it created a new timeline, Dahl said, and ignored Hester throwing up his hands helplessly. Do we know when that happened?
You think that might help us? Hansen asked.
I'm just curious, Dahl said. We're an alternate timeline from reality, whatever that is. I'd like to know when that branching off happened.
I don't think we can know, Hansen said. There's nothing that would signal where that timeline twist happened, because from our perspective, there's never been a break. We don't have any alternate timelines to compare ourselves to. We can only see our timeline.
We could just start looking for when completely ridiculous shit started happening in our universe, Hester said.
But to find completely ridiculous shit, Duval said, does space travel count? Contact with alien races? Does quantum physics count? Because I don't understand that crap at all. As far as I'm concerned, quantum physics could have been written by a hack.
The first science fiction television show I found information about was something called Captain Video, and that was in 1949, Hansen said. The first Star Trek show was 20 years after that. So, probably this show was made sometime between the late 1960s and the end of television broadcasting in 2105.
That's a lot of time to cover, Dahl said. Assuming that Star Trek actually exists, Hester said, there are all sorts of entertainment programs today that exist only in our timeline. The timeline we exist in could go back before this Star Trek show was actually made, and it exists in this timeline basically to taunt us.
Okay, now that is recursive and meta, Duval said.
I think that's probably what it is. Hester said.
We've already established whoever is writing us is an asshole. This sounds like just the sort of thing an asshole writer would do.
I have to give you that, Duval said.
This timeline sucks, Hester said.
Andy, Hansen said, and motioned away from the table. A cargo cart was rolling up to the table they were sitting at. Inside of it was a note. Dahl took the note. The cargo cart rolled away.
A note from Jenkins? Duval asked.
Yeah, Dahl said.
What does it say? Duval asked.
It says he thinks he's come up with something that might work, Dahl said. He wants to talk to us about it. All of us.
Chapter 14. I want to warn you that this sounds like a crazy idea, Jenkins said.
I'm amazed you feel the need to say that anymore, Hester said.
Jenkins nodded as if to say, point. Then he said, time travel.
Time travel? Dahl said.
Jenkins nodded and fired up his holographic display, showing the timeline of the Intrepid and the tentacles branching down, signifying the collection of episodes.
Here, he said, pointing to a branching node of tendrils. In the middle of what I think was this show's fourth season, Abernathy, King, and Hartnell took a shuttle and aimed it toward a black hole, using its gravity-warping powers to go backward in time.
That makes no sense at all, Dahl said.
Of course it doesn't, Jenkins said. It's yet another violation of physics caused by the narrative.
The point is not that they violated physics in a nonsensical way. The point is they went back in time. And they went back in time to a specific time, a specific year. They went back to 2010.
So? Hester said.
So, I think the reason they went back to that year was because that was the current year of this show's production, Jenkins said.
Science fiction shows had their people going back in time all the time, Hansen said. They were always having them meet famous historical people or take part in important events. Jenkins pointed his finger excitedly at Hansen. But that's just it, he said. If a show goes back to a specific time in its actual past, they'll usually key it to a specific important historical person or event, because they have to give the audience something it knows about history, or else it won't care. But if the show goes back to the present, then it doesn't do that. It just shows that time and the characters reacting to it. It's a dramatic irony thing. So if the show just has them wandering around a past time, if they meet someone famous, it's the past. But if they don't, it's the present, Duvall said. Their present. More or less, Jenkins said. That's some great show trivia, Duvall said. But what does it have to do with us? If we go back to the present, we can find a way to stop it, Dahl said suddenly. Jenkins smiled and touched his nose. Duvall looked at the two of them, not quite getting it. Explain this to me, Andy, she said, because right now it just looks like you and Jenkins are sharing a crazy moment. No, this makes sense, Dahl said. We know when the present is for the show. We know how to time travel to get back to the show's present. We go back to the present, we can stop the people who are making the show. If we stop the show, then everything stops, Hester said. No, Dahl said. When the narrative doesn't need us, we still exist. And this timeline existed before the narrative started intruding on it. He paused and turned to Jenkins. Right? Maybe, Jenkins said. Maybe? Hester said, suddenly very concerned. There's actually an interesting philosophical argument about whether this timeline exists independently and the narrative accesses it, or whether the creation of the narrative also created this timeline, causing its history to appear instantly, even if to us on the inside it appears that the passage of time has actually occurred, Jenkins said. It's very much a corollary to the strong anthropic principle, Jenkins, Dahl said, but we can talk about that some other time, Jenkins said, getting the hint. The point is, yes, whether it existed before the narrative or was created by it, this timeline now exists and is persistent even when the narrative does not impose itself. Okay, Hester said. Probably, Jenkins said. I really want to throw things at him, Hester said to Dahl. I'm going to vote for the idea we exist and will continue to exist even when this show stops, Dahl said, because otherwise we're all doomed anyway, all right? No one offered a disagreement. In which case, to get back to what I was saying, if we go back in time and stop the show, then the Intrepid stops being the focus of the narrative, Dahl said. It goes back to just being a ship. We stop being glorified extras in our own lives. So we won't die, Duvall said. Everybody dies, Jenkins said. Thank you for that news flash, Duvall said, irritated. I mean, we won't die just to give an audience a thrill. Probably not, Jenkins said. If we really are in a television series, then it's going to be hard to stop, Hansen said, and looked at Dahl. Andy, a really successful television series could be worth a lot of money, just like a good drama series today can be. It's not just the show. It's everything around it, including things like merchandising. Your boyfriend has an action figure, Hester said to Duvall. Yeah, and you don't, Duvall shot back. In this universe, that's a problem. I'm saying that even if we do travel back in time and find the people making this show, we might not be able to stop it, Hansen said. There might be too much money involved. What other option do we have? Dahl said. If we stay here, the only thing to do is wait for the narrative to kill us off. We might have a slim chance of stopping the show, but a slim chance there is better than a certainty of a dramatic death here. Why even bother trying to stop the show? Hester said. Look, if we really are extras, then we're not actually needed here. I say we go back in time and just stay there. Do you really want to live in the early 21st century? Duvall asked. It wasn't exactly the most cheerful time to be alive. It's not like they had a cure for cancer then. Whatever, Hester said. Or baldness, Duvall said. This is my original hair, Hester said. You can't stay in the past, Jenkins said. If you do, you'll dissolve. What? Hester said. It has to do with conservation of mass and energy, Jenkins said. All the atoms you're using now are being used in the past. If you stay in the past, then the atoms have to be in two places at the same time. This creates an imbalance, and the atoms have to decide where to be. And eventually, they'll choose their then-present configuration because, technically speaking, you're from the future, so you don't actually exist yet. What's eventually here? Dahl asked. About 6 days, Jenkins said. That's completely idiotic, Hester said. I don't make up the rules, Jenkins said. It's just how it worked last time. It makes sense in the narrative, though.
It gave Abernathy, King, and Hartnell a reason to get their mission done in a certain dramatic amount of time.
This timeline sucks, Hester said.
If you brought Adams forward, they would have the same problem, Jenkins said, and in that case, they'd choose the present, which means the thing from the past would dissolve. It's a pretty problem, actually. Mind you, that's just one of your problems.
What else is there? Dahl asked.
Well, you'll need to acquire a shuttle, which will be no small matter, Jenkins said. It's not like they'll let you borrow one for a lazy excursion, but that's not actually the hard part.
What's the hard part? Duval asked.
You're going to have to get one of the five stars of the show to come with you, Jenkins said. Take your pick. Abernathy, King, West, Hartnell, or Kerensky.
What do we need one of them for? Hester asked.
You said it yourself, Jenkins said. You're extras. If you try to aim a shuttle at a black hole, you know what'll happen? The gravitational forces will rip apart the shuttle, you'll spaghettify into a long stream of atoms sucking down to the singularity, and you'll die. You'll be dead long before the spaghettification, of course. That's the end event for you. But you get my point.
And that won't happen if we have one of the main characters in the show, Dahl said.
No, because the narrative needs them for later, Jenkins said. So in that case, when you zoom toward a black hole, you'll switch over to narrative physics.
And we're sure main characters never die, Hester said.
Oh, they can die, Jenkins said, and Hester gave him another look like he wanted to punch him. But not like this. When a main character dies, they'd make a big deal out of it. The idea that the narrative would let one of them die on a mission to go back in time to stop their own show from being made just doesn't seem very likely in the grand scheme of things.
It's nice at least something is unlikely at this point, Hester said.
So, to recap, Dahl said. Kidnap a senior officer, steal a shuttle, fly dangerously close to a black hole, go back in time, find the people making the show, stop them from making it anymore, and then we come back to our own time before our atoms divorce us and we disintegrate.
That's what I've got for you, yes, Jenkins said.
It's a little crazy, Dahl said.
I told you that going in, Jenkins reminded him. And you didn't disappoint, Dahl said.
So what do we do now? Duval asked.
I think we have to work the problem a step at a time, Dahl said. And the first step is, how do we get that shuttle?
Dahl's phone rang. It was Science Officer King, ordering him to the senior officer briefing room.
The religious war on Forshan is heating up, King said, with Captain Abernathy nodding beside him. The Universal Union is trying to negotiate a ceasefire, but we're limited by a lack of live translators. Our diplomatic team has computer translators, of course, but they only translate the first dialect with any accuracy, and even then it lacks the ability to handle idiom. We run the risk of unintentionally offending the Forshan at the worst possible time.
King here tells me you speak all four dialects, Abernathy said.
That's correct, sir, Dahl said.
Then there's no time to lose, Abernathy said. We need you to go to Forshan immediately and start acting as a translator for our diplomats.
Yes, sir, Dahl said, and felt a chill. It's come for me, he thought. The narrative has finally come for me, just as we figured out how to stop it.
How long until the Intrepid reaches Forshan? He asked.
The Intrepid isn't, King said. We have a mission to the Ames system, which can't be put off. You'll have to go yourself.
How? Dahl asked.
You'll be taking a shuttle, King said.
Dahl burst out laughing.
Ensign Dahl, are you all right? King asked, after a moment.
Sorry, sir, Dahl said. I was embarrassed that I asked such an obvious question. When do I leave?
As soon as we assign a shuttle pilot for you, Abernathy said.
If I may beg the captain's indulgence, I would like to select my own pilot, Dahl said.
In fact, it might be best if I selected my own team for this mission.
Abernathy and King both frowned.
I'm not sure you need an entire away team for this mission, King said.
Respectfully, sir, I do, Dahl said.
As you note, this is a critical mission. I am one of the few humans who can speak all four Forshan dialects, so I expect I will be used exhaustively by our diplomats. I will need my own team for errands and to send communiques between diplomatic teams. I'll also need to retain the pilot and shuttle in case I am called to travel on Forshan itself between those diplomatic teams.
How large of a team do you need? King asked.
Dahl paused and looked up, as if thinking.
A pilot and two aides should probably do it, he said.
King looked at Abernathy, who nodded.
Fine, King said, but ensign rank and below only.
I have just the people in mind, Dahl said. Although, I wonder if it might be useful to have a senior officer on the team as well.
Such as? Abernathy asked. Lieutenant Kerensky, Dahl said. I'm not sure how an astrogator would be of much use on this mission, Ensign, Keying said. We do try to have away team members have relevant skills. Dahl paused ever so slightly at this, but then moved on. Then perhaps you, sir, he said to Keying. You have some familiarity with the Forshan language, after all.
I know what this is about, Abernathy said. Dahl blinked.
Sir? He said.
I know what this is about, Abernathy repeated. You were with me on the Nance, Dill.
Dahl, said Dahl.
Dahl, Abernathy said. You were there when your friend was killed, when that madman tried to assassinate me. You saw firsthand the risks of an away team. Now, you're being asked to lead an away team, and you're worried about the responsibility. You're worried about someone dying on your watch.
I'm pretty sure it's not that, Dahl said.
I'm telling you not to worry about that, Abernathy said, not hearing Dahl. You're an officer, Dill. Dahl, sorry. You're an officer, and you've been trained to lead. You don't need me or Keying or Kerensky to tell you what you already know. Just do it. I believe in you, damn it.
You're very inspiring, sir, Dahl said after a moment.
I see good things for you, Ensign, Abernathy said. It wouldn't surprise me one day to have you as one of my senior staff.
I should live so long, Dahl said.
So, Abernathy said, assemble your team. Brief them and have them ready to go in 4 hours. Think you can handle that?
I do, sir, Dahl said.
Thank you, sir.
He stood and saluted. Abernathy returned the salute. Dahl nodded to Keying and then left as quickly as he could, and then called Hester as soon as he was 10 steps away from the briefing room.
So what happened? Hester asked.
Our schedule just got drastically tightened, Dahl said.
Listen, do you still have Finn's effects?
Are you talking about the same effects I think you're talking about? Hester asked carefully.
Yeah, Dahl said.
Then yes, Hester said. It would have been awkward to hand them over.
Find a small blue oblong effect, Dahl said, and then meet me at Maya's barracks as quickly as you can.
Chapter 15. 3 hours and 30 minutes later, Dahl knocked on the door of Lieutenant Kerensky's private berth. Hester and Hansen were behind him, storage crate and cargo cart in tow. The berth door slid open, and Duval was inside.
For God's sake, get in here, she said.
Dahl looked into the berth.
We're not all going to fit in there, he said.
Then you get in here, she said, and bring the crate.
She looked at Hester and Hansen. You two try to look like you're not doing something that will get a shot.
Swell, Hester said.
Dahl pushed the storage crate into the berth, followed it, and then closed the door behind him. Inside was Lieutenant Kerensky, pantless and passed out.
You couldn't put his pants back on him? Dahl asked.
Andy, the next time you want to drug into unconsciousness the person you're screwing, you can do it the way you want to, Duval said.
Which reminds me to reiterate that this is definitely a you-owe-me-a-fuck level of favor.
That's ironic, considering, Dahl said, nodding in the direction of Kerensky.
Very funny, Duval said.
How long has he been out? Dahl asked.
Not even 5 minutes, Duval said. It was completely unbelievable. I tried to get him to have a drink with me first. I put that little pill in his tumbler, but he just wanted to get at it. I could tell you what I had to do to get him to take a drink, but that's more about me than I think you want to know.
I'm trying to imagine what that could even mean, and I have to tell you, I'm drawing a blank, Dahl said.
It's better that way, Duval said.
Anyway, he's out now, and if I'm any indication of how effective these little pills are, he'll be down for several hours at least.
Good, Dahl said. Let's get to work.
Duval nodded and stripped Kerensky's bunk, lining the bottom of the crate with the sheets and the blanket.
Will he have enough air? She asked.
It's not airtight, Dahl said.
But maybe you should put his pants back on him now.
Not yet, Duval said.
I'm not sure where this is leading, Dahl said.
Shut up and let's get him into this thing, Duval said.
5 minutes later, Dahl and Duval had contorted Kerensky into the storage crate. Duval took Kerensky's pants and jacket and stuffed them into a duffel bag.
Where's his phone? Dahl asked.
Duval grabbed it off Kerensky's desk and tossed it to Dahl, who opened up the text messaging function, typed a note, and sent it.
There, he said. Kerensky just sent a note that he is on sick leave for his next shift. It'll be 12 hours at least before anyone comes looking for him.
Poor bastard, Duval said, looking at the crate.
I do feel bad about this. He's dim and self-centered, but he's not really a bad guy. And he's decent enough in the cot.
Don't need to know, Dahl said. Prude, Duval said. You can make it up to him later, Dahl said, and opened the door, on the other side of which stood Hester. Thought you guys had started up a game of Parcheesi in there, he said. Don't you start, Duval said. Let's get him up on that cart. A few minutes later, the four of them and their unconscious cargo were at the door of the shuttle bay. Get the shuttle ready, Dahl said to Hester, then turned to Hansen and Duval, and get the cargo into the shuttle as quietly as possible, please. Look who's all authoritative now, Duval said. For now, let's just pretend you actually respect my authority, Dahl said. Where are you going? Hansen asked. I have one more quick stop to make, Dahl said. Have to pick up some extra supplies. Hansen nodded and backed the cargo cart into the shuttle bay, Duval and Hester following. Dahl walked until he found a quiet cargo tunnel and quietly opened the access door to it. Jenkins was on the other side. You know that's creepy, Dahl said. I'm trying not to waste your time, Jenkins said. He held up a briefcase. The leftovers from that mission Abernathy, Keying, and Hartnell went on, he said. Phones and money. The phones will work with that era's communication and information networks. Those networks will be slow and rudimentary. Be patient with them. The money is physical money, which they still use where you're going. Will they be able to tell it's not real? Dahl asked. They couldn't last time, Jenkins said. How much is in there? Dahl said. About $93,000, Jenkins said. Is that a lot? Dahl asked. It'll be enough to get you through 6 days, Jenkins said. Dahl took the suitcase and turned to go. One other thing, Jenkins said, and then handed him a small box. Dahl took it. You really want me to do this, he said. I'm not going with you, Jenkins said, so you have to do it for me. I may not have time, Dahl said. I know, Jenkins said, if you have time. And it won't last, Dahl said. You know it won't. It doesn't have to last, Jenkins said. It just has to last long enough. All right, Dahl said. Thanks, Jenkins said. And now I think you better get off the ship as soon as you can. Leaving that note from Kerensky was smart, but don't tempt fate any more than you have to. You're already tempting it enough. You can't do this to me, Kerensky said in a muffled fashion from inside the crate. He had woken up 5 minutes earlier after sleeping more than 10 hours. Hester had been taunting him since. That's a funny thing to say, Hester said, considering where you are. Let me out, Kerensky said. That's an order. You keep saying funny things, Hester said, from inside a crate, which you can't escape from. There was a moment of silence at that. Where are my pants? Kerensky asked plaintively. Hester glanced over at Duval. I'm going to let you feel that one, he said. Duval rolled her eyes. I really have to pee, Kerensky said. Really bad. Duval sighed. Anatoly, she said. It's me. Maya? Kerensky said. They got you too. Don't worry, I won't let these bastards do anything to you. Do you hear me, you sons of bitches? Hester looked over to Dahl disbelievingly. Dahl shrugged. Anatoly, Maya said more forcefully, they didn't get me too. What? Kerensky said. Then, after a minute. Oh. Oh. Duval agreed. Now, listen, Anatoly. I'm going to open up the crate and you can come out, but I really need you not to be stupid or to panic. Do you think you can do that? There was a pause. Yes, Kerensky said. Anatoly, that little pause you did just suggests to me that what you're really planning to do is something stupid as soon as we uncrate you, Duval said. So just to be sure, two of my friends here have pulse guns trained on you. If you do anything particularly idiotic, they'll just blast you. Do you understand? Yes, Kerensky said, sounding somewhat more resigned. Okay, Duval said. She walked over to the crate. Pulse guns? Dahl asked. No one had pulse guns with them. It was Duval's turn to shrug. You know he's lying, Hester said. That's why I have his pants, Duval said, and started unlatching the hinges. Kerensky burst out of the crate, rolled, spied the door, and sprinted toward it, flinging it open and throwing himself through it. Everyone else in the room watched him go. What do we do now? Hansen asked. Window, Dahl said. They stood up and walked toward the window, cranking the louvers so they were open to the outside. This should be good, Hester said. 30 seconds later, Kerensky burst into view, running into the street, whereupon he stopped, utterly confused. A car honked at him to get out of the way. He backed up onto the sidewalk.
Anatoly, come back in, Duval said through the window. For God's sake, you're not wearing pants.
Kerensky turned around, following her voice.
This isn't the ship, he yelled up to the window.
No, it's the Best Western Media Center Inn and Suites, Duval said. In Burbank.
Is that a planet? Kerensky yelled. What system is it in?
Oh, for Christ's sake, Hester muttered.
You're on Earth, you moron, he yelled at Kerensky.
Kerensky looked around disbelievingly.
Was there an apocalypse? He yelled.
Hester looked at Duval. You actually have sex with this imbecile? Look, he's had a rough day, Duval said, and then turned her attention to Kerensky.
We went back in time, Anatoly, she said. It's the year 2012. This is what it looks like. Now come back inside.
You drugged me and kidnapped me, Kerensky said accusingly.
I know, and I'm really sorry about that, Duval said. I was kind of in a rush. But listen, you have to come back inside. You're half naked. Even in 2012, you can get arrested for that. You don't want to get arrested in 2012, Anatoly. It's not a nice time to be in jail. Come back inside, okay? We're in room 215. Just take the stairs.
Kerensky looked around, looked down at his pantless lower half, and then sprinted back into the Best Western.
I'm not rooming with him, Hester said. I just want to be clear on that.
A minute later, there was a knock on the door. Hansen went to open it. Kerensky strode into the room.
First, I want my pants, Kerensky said.
Everyone turned to Duval, who gave everyone a what expression, and then pulled Kerensky's pants out of her duffel and threw them at him.
Second, Kerensky said, fumbling into his pants, I want to know why we're here.
We're here because we landed and hid the shuttle in Griffith Park, and this was the closest hotel, Hester said. And it was a good thing it was so close, because your crated ass was not light.
I don't mean the hotel, Kerensky spat. I mean here, on Earth, in 2012, in Burbank. Someone needs to explain this to me now.
This time, everyone turned to Dahl.
Oh, he said. Well, it's complicated.
Eat something, Kerensky, Duval said, pushing the remains of the pizza at him. They were in a booth at the Numero Uno Pizza down the street from the Best Western. Kerensky was now wearing pants.
Kerensky barely glanced at the pizza. I'm not sure it's safe, he said.
They did have food laws in the 21st century, Hansen said. Here in the United States, anyway.
I'll pass, Kerensky said.
Let him starve, Hester said, and reached for the last piece.
Kerensky's hand shot out and he grabbed it.
Got it, Dahl said,
and turned his phone, his 21st century phone, around, showing the article to the rest of them.
Chronicles of the Intrepid.
He turned the phone back around to him.
Shows every Friday at 9 on something called the Corwin Action Network, which is apparently something called a basic cable channel. It started in 2007, which means it's now in its 6th season.
This is completely ridiculous, Kerensky said around his pizza.
Dahl looked over to him and then pressed the screen to open up another article.
And playing Lieutenant Anatoly Kerensky on Chronicles of the Intrepid is an actor named Mark Corey, he said, flipping the screen around to show Kerensky the picture of a smiling doppelganger in a stylish blazer and open-collared dress shirt. Born in 1985 in Chatsworth, California. I wonder if that's anywhere near here.
Kerensky grabbed the phone and read the article sullenly. This doesn't prove anything, he said. We don't know how accurate any of this information is. For all we know, this,
he scrolled up on the phone screen to find a label, this Wikipedia information database here is compiled by complete idiots. He handed back the phone.
We could try to track down this Corey fellow, Hansen said. I want to try someone else first, Dahl said, and started poking at his phone again.
If Mark Corey is a regular on the show, he's probably going to be hard to get to. I think we should probably aim lower.
What do you mean? Duval said.
I mean, I think we should start with me, Dahl said, and then turned the phone around again to a picture of what appeared to be his own face.
Meet Brian Abnett.
Dahl's friends looked at the picture.
It's a little unsettling, isn't it? Hansen said after a minute.
Looking at a picture of someone who is exactly like you but isn't?
No kidding, Dahl said.
Of course, you all have your own people, too.
At that, the rest of them started to power up their own phones.
What does Wikipedia say about him? Kerensky sneered. He did not have his own phone.
Nothing, Dahl said. He apparently doesn't meet the standard. I followed the link on the Chronicles of the Intrepid page to a database called IMDb, which had information about the actors on the series. He has a page there.
So how do we contact him? Duval said. It doesn't have contact information on that page, Dahl said, but let me put his name in the search field.
I just found myself, Hansen said. I'm some guy named Chad.
I knew a Chad once, Hester said. He used to beat me up.
I'm sorry, Hansen said. It wasn't you, Hester said. Either of you.
He has his own page, Dahl said.
Chad? Hansen asked.
No, Brian Abnett, Dahl said. He scrolled through the page until he found a tab that said Contact. Dahl pressed it, and an address popped up.
It's for his agency, Dahl said.
Wow. Actors had agents even then, Duval said.
Even now, you mean, Dahl said, and pressed his screen again.
His agency is only a couple of miles from here. We can walk it.
What are we going to do when we get there? Duval asked.
I'm going to get his address from them, Dahl said.
You think they'll give it to you? Hester asked.
Of course they will, Dahl said.
I'm him.
Chapter 16.
Okay, I see him, Duval said, pointing up Camarillo Street. He's the one on the bicycle.
Are you sure? Dahl asked.
I know what you look like, even wearing a bicycle helmet, Duval said. Trust me.
Now, remember not to freak him out, Dahl said. He had on a baseball cap he had bought and was holding a copy of the day's Los Angeles Times in his hand. The two of them were standing in front of the condominium complex Brian Abnett lived in.
You're telling me not to freak him out, she said. You're the one who's his clone.
I don't want him freaking out until he sees me, Dahl said.
Don't worry, I'm good with men, Duval said. Now go stand over there and try not to look...
She paused.
Try not to look what? Asked Dahl.
Try not to look so clony, Duval said.
At least not for a couple more minutes.
Dahl grinned, stepped back, and raised his newspaper.
Hey, Dahl heard Duval say a minute later.
He peeked over the top of the newspaper just enough to see her walk up to Brian Abnett, who was getting off his bike and unlatching his helmet.
Hey, Abnett said, and then took another look at her.
Wait.
Don't tell me, he said, smiling. We've worked together.
Maybe, Duval said coyly.
Recently, Abnett said.
Maybe, Duval said again.
That hemorrhoid cream commercial, Abnett said.
No, Duval said flatly.
Wait! Abnett said, pointing. Chronicles of the Intrepid! A few months ago, you and I did that scene together where we were being chased by killer robots! Tell me I'm right.
It's very close to what I remember, Duval said.
Thank you, Abnett said. I hate it when I forget people I've worked with. You're still doing work with them, right? I think I've seen you around the set since then.
You could say so, Duval said. What about you?
I've got a small character arc on the show, Abnett said. It's only been a few shots through the season, and of course they're killing off my character a couple episodes from now. But until then, it's nice work.
He motioned at the condominium building. It means I get to stay here through the year anyway.
So they're going to kill you off, Duval asked.
You sure about that?
That's what the agent tells me, Abnett said. She says they're still writing the episode, but it's pretty much a done deal. Which is fine, since she wants to put me up for a couple of film roles, and staying on Intrepid will just get in the way of that.
Sad about the character, though, Duval said.
Well, that's science fiction television for you, though, Abnett said. Someone's got to be the red shirt.
The what? Duval said.
The red shirt, Abnett said. You know, in the original Star Trek, they always had Kirk and Bones and Spock and then some poor dude in a red shirt who got vaporized before the first commercial. The moral of the story was not to wear a red shirt or go on away missions when you're the only one whose name isn't on the opening credits.
Ah, Duval said.
You never watched Star Trek? Abnett asked, smiling.
It was a little before my time, Duval said.
So what brings you to my neighborhood, Abnett said.
Maya, Duval said.
Maya, Abnett repeated. You aren't looking at the condo that's for sale in the building, are you? I probably shouldn't say this, but I think you might want to look at other places. The last guy in that condo, I'm pretty sure, was making meth in the bathtub. It's a miracle the entire building didn't go up.
Oh, I won't be staying for very long, Duval said. Actually, I came looking for you.
Really? Abnett said, with an expression that flickered between being flattered that an attractive woman came looking for him and worry that the woman, who might be crazy, knew where he lived. Duval read the flicker of expression perfectly. I'm not stalking you, she assured Abnett.
Okay, that's a relief, Abnett said.
Duval motioned with her head toward Dahl, still semi-obscured by the hat and newspaper. In fact, my friend over there is a big fan of yours, and he just wanted to meet you for a second, if that's okay. It would really make his day.
Yeah, okay, sure, Abnett said, still looking at Duval. What's your friend's name?
Andy Dahl, Duval said.
Really? Abnett said. That's so weird. That's actually the name of my character on Chronicles of the Intrepid.
That's why he wants to meet you, Duval said. And it's not the only thing we share in common, Dahl said. He walked up to Abnett, took off the cap, and dropped the Times. Hello, Brian. I'm you, in red shirt form. I'm still having trouble with this, Abnett said. He was sitting in the Best Western suite with the crew members of the Intrepid. I mean, really, really, really having trouble with this.
You think you're having trouble, Hester said. Think about us. At least you're not fictional.
Do you know how unreal this is? Abnett said. We've been living with this for a while now, yes, Dahl said.
So you understand why I'm freaking out about it, Abnett said.
We could do another freckle check if you like, Dahl said, referring to the moment, shortly after he introduced himself, where Abnett checked every visible freckle, mole, and blemish on both of them to confirm that they matched exactly.
No, I've just got to sit with this, Abnett said.
Hester looked over to Dahl, quickly to Abnett, and then back to Dahl, conveying the message, the other you is a flake, with his expression. Dahl shrugged. Actors were actors.
You know what convinces me that you might be telling the truth, Abnett said.
The fact you're sitting in a room with an exact copy of yourself, Hester said.
No, Abnett said. Well, yes, that.
But what's really helping me wrap my head around the idea you're telling the truth is him. Abnett pointed at Kerensky.
Me? Kerensky said, surprised. Why me?
Because the real Mark Corey wouldn't be caught dead in a Best Western attempting to prank an extra whose name he can't be bothered to remember, Abnett said. No offense, but the other you is a complete asshole.
So's this one, Hester said.
Hey, Kerensky said. Having another me around is hard to swallow, Abnett said, and pointed to Kerensky again. But another one of him? It's actually easier to accept.
You believe us then, Duval said.
I don't know if I believe you, Abnett said. What I do know is that this is very definitely the strangest damn thing that's ever happened to me, and I want to find out what happens next.
So you'll help us, Dahl said.
I want to help you, but I don't know if I can help you, Abnett said.
Look, I'm just an extra. They allow me onto the set for work, but it's not like I can bring anyone else in with me. I get a few lines with the regular cast, but otherwise we're told not to bother them, and I don't talk to the showrunners or other producers at all. I couldn't get you in to see any of them if I wanted to, and even if I did, I don't think any of them would believe you. This is Hollywood. We make things up for a living, and the story you're telling is completely nuts. If I tell it to anyone, they'll just throw me off the set.
That might keep you from getting killed a couple of episodes from now, Hansen said to Dahl. Abnett shook his head.
No, they'll just recast the part with someone who looks enough like me to work, he said. You'll still be killed off, unless you stay here.
Dahl shook his head. We expire in 5 days.
Expire? Abnett asked.
It's complicated, Dahl said. It involves atoms.
5 days is not a lot of time, Abnett said, especially if you want to kill a show.
Tell us something we don't know, Hester said.
Maybe you can't help us directly, Duval said. But do you know someone who could?
Even as an extra. You know the people who work high up the food chain.
That's what I'm telling you, Abnett said. I don't. I don't know anyone on the show who could move you up the ladder.
His gaze rested on Kerensky, and he suddenly cocked his head.
But you know what? Maybe I know someone outside the show who could help you.
Why are you looking at me like that? Kerensky asked, unsettled by Abnett's gaze.
Are those the only clothes you have? Abnett asked.
I wasn't given the option of packing, Kerensky said. Why? What's wrong with the uniform?
There's nothing wrong with the uniform if you're at Comic-Con,
But it's not going to work for the club I'm thinking of, Abnett said.
Which club? Dahl asked.
What's Comic-Con? Kerensky asked.
The Vine Club, Abnett said. One of those very secret clubs mere mortals can't get into? I can't get into it. But Mark Corey rates. Barely.
Barely, Dahl said. That means he has first floor access, but not second floor, and definitely not basement, Abnett said. For second floor, you have to be the star.